And welcome to everybody on YouTube as we join everybody for overtime, more additional time for Off the Hook listeners to participate. And did we all make it? Kyle, you're here?
Yeah, I think.
And Alex?
Present.
Gila and Rob?
We are here.
We are.
And YouTube? YouTube is here too. Awesome. Wow.
It's here. Yeah.
Couldn't ask for more. Could ask for more listeners, though. I know it's kind of hard sometimes. There's something with YouTube, because I see it go down by like 10 at a time, and then I don't know, something bizarre there. Interesting discussion. I didn't want to spend the whole show talking about that case, but something like this comes up, and you can't ignore it. You have to acknowledge what's going on and realize that people are suffering. You got to speak up and say something. You got to do something. The alternative of just being quiet. We do too much of that. We do too much of that as a society, where we just see things going on in front of us and we don't do enough to try and change it, or at least voice our outrage.
And it has a lot to it. We can't kind of figure it out, I think, just in our own heads. We have to have the discussion. We have to be able to converse and figure out what's really kind of going on with that story. You know, it's no good if you have one perception, I read it another way, and then we don't talk about it, we don't share it, we act like it's just something that someone else will figure out. That gets us nowhere, and then we have different understandings going away from it, mm-hmm. and have no idea, you know, how it ends up wherever it is going to culminate to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about something else. Again, though, we're going to talk about crypto a little bit. Gila, you found this story about a crypto group that's being shamed for spending. I can't even understand that. They're spending $3 million on a Dune book, mistakenly believing they had acquired a copyright to produce NFTs. What in God's name is this story about?
Well, I've been fascinated by this whole situation. They bought a copy of a Bible for a film adaptation that didn't happen of Dune. And they bought it for 100 times the initial estimate of what it was worth. They paid 2.6 million euro for this book. And they said, okay, now that we've got it, sorry, I didn't mean to hit you. Now that we've got it, we're going to take this. We're going to make it an animated series, and we're going to open this up to as many people as possible, because they thought that they bought the copyright along with the book. They thought that buying this book for that much money meant that they automatically own the copyright.
Wait, that's all they used as logic, that they had done this? Is it's so expensive, we must have bought the copyright? They didn't check to see if they actually were buying the copyright?
The entire thing of, hey, let's throw 2.6 million euro at something so we can make an NFT does not seem to me to be the harbinger of really good planning. So, yeah, I think they just assumed that they had the copyright.
Was this an antique book at all? I mean, why would it command such a price? Or was the sale represented as including something like a copyright? In other words, it was misleading and they were duped?
Best I can understand, no. They assumed. They guessed. The book is from the 70s. And what they said was... Can you scroll up for a second, please? What they said was, now that we've won the auction, our mission is to, one, make the book public to the extent permitted by law, two, produce an original animated limited series produced by the book and sell it to a streaming service, three, support derivative projects from the community.
Support as in sue for copyright infringement?
Wow.
That's how they're going to support the derivative stuff?
Yeah. The whole thing is very confusing to me. So there are 10 copies of this book, right? That was the Bible for the movie that never happened. And you can read the book online for free. It all exists online.
Wait, what movie that never happened? There's been a couple of Dune movies.
Jodorowsky's Dune?
Oh, boy. How many times are we going to tell the same story? It's just, oh, boy. So... Where does this stand right now?
Unclear at this point.
Okay. Why
they're,
is it?
They're doubling down on trying to make this happen, but
wow. Well, did you have more information, Gila, to give us?
No, that's all I've got right now.
Okay, Alex.
This sounds like this was a misunderstanding, a fundamental misunderstanding about the copyright.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. A pretty big misunderstanding.
Well, about a specific legal doctrine associated with copyright. And Gila, does this ring a bell? Does the first sale doctrine come into play in this case at all?
Give me 1 second. Not that I know of.
Okay, because so generally, is what happens when you buy a book, right? You go or you buy, you know, 2600 magazine or whatever, right? You do own the copyright
to
that individual book.
Well, hold on. Somebody buys a copy of 2600 at Barnes and Noble. They're not buying the copyright.
You own the copyright to that individual copy that you have.
Yeah, but I don't think there is.
So you can do what you want with that book.
Right.
Or that
okay.
copy.
You can, well, within you can reason, you can't kill somebody with it.
In like private no. exhibition, like
you can't use it to start a fire.
It's for your eyes, one reader at a time.
You can have someone peering over your shoulder,
and you can read it to someone.
That happened to me on the subway the other day.
I think that's still allowed. Yeah.
Uh huh. I'm sorry, Alex. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you can do whatever you want with it. You can generate heat over 451 degrees Fahrenheit. You can certainly use it to start a fire. You can do whatever the hell you want with that.
Well, no, you could,
copy,
but I'm saying legally.
You can replicate it and sell it to others.
People, please don't start fires with 2600. We're not encouraging that.
Yeah, actually put out fires with them.
Uh-huh.
We prefer that.
By the way, you made reference to the novel Fahrenheit 451. That's the temperature that I believe books burn at. Has anyone come out with a parallel novel? That's the Celsius number of Fahrenheit 451, Celsius whatever. I don't know what it is. Can somebody ask an Alexis device what 451 Fahrenheit converts to?
Please.
No? Okay.
That's interesting, though, because when you publish books in different areas, there are people that localize the books. And so, like, the hood of a car in America might be described as the bonnet of a car in the UK and things like that. So people in various places understand it. So maybe it needs to be localized for a Celsius.
Which is 232.778 degrees Celsius.
Your Alexis device is a little faster than ours because we just got the same number. That's, so,
oh, I didn't, Alexa. I just looked it up.
Well, but, now you can look up if there's a book with that title or a webpage with that title. I'm sure somebody has done this because every idea you think of these days, somebody thought of it last year.
All right, let's look at.
I just wanted to say the association with the internet and let's make money like that has been ingrained. It's sadly, if you're out there and you're teaching, you know that this isn't. The immediate association should be internet, and the immediate association should be information, not money. And I think that's where these little ventures, they're a little get confused. They think I'll just do this and then internetify it, and that'll make me a bajillion, and then I win, and everybody else will be impressed by me.
Go ahead, Gayla.
So it's actually funny because their initial plan, this group of people referring to themselves as a DAO, which I didn't know what that stood for until recently, but that's a decentralized autonomous organization. So a bunch of folks. And initially they were like, yeah, we're going to buy this really expensive book and we're going to burn it and make the video of us burning it an NFT.
Oh my God. So wait, they're going to spend, how much did they spend?
They wound up spending 2.6 million euros.
So they have $2.6 million to basically burn buying this book.
Actually. Okay,
and
2.6 million euro.
2.6 million euros. So it's even more in dollars. Let's say about $3 million. And they're going to spend $3 million so they can burn a book and take a picture of that and somehow sell that original picture for more than, I assume, $3 million. And that was their plan. And you want to trust these people with your money? Yeah,
They've got the money.
They got the money now, but they're a are they a cryptocurrency manager? Is that what they are?
They're a group of I think they're trying to make crypto happen, or they're trying to make NFTs and things like that happen. But if I could just really quickly.
Yes.
Kyle, what you said about monetizing things, and I'm sorry to bring it back to Virgil for a second, but that was where my mind went earlier. The understanding of not understanding and not understanding what he was getting out of it, and this sense that we have that if you don't monetize everything you're doing it for shady reasons. And that whole connection that if he's not going to get money from North Korea, then what's he doing?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I thought it was the opposite. I thought if you were trying to monetize something, that made you shady. But now if you don't monetize, that's suspicious.
Absolutely.
Just satisfying curiosity. That's not enough.
Gig economy, hustle, put it on Etsy. If you have a hobby, you need to be making money from it. If you didn't start a side hustle during the pandemic, you have failed life.
It's astute.
If you're not monetizing it, in the eyes of society now, it's like what we're doing right now, because we're not getting paid for this. There is a section of society that thinks that we are wasting our time in a big, bad way.
Oh, no, I'm used to that. I'm used to that. But to be thought of as being extra shady because you're not making money at it.
But we are super shady.
But for different reasons.
And we're chumps because YouTube gets to sell ads, even though we turn that off or something. And we're not monetizing it. They're still going to make money from everybody else on our content without us really knowing it, because we agreed to something because this is the platform we're using. Yeah, there's so many layers and depths of what people are impressed and not impressed by. The important thing is to realize the power of the network and the information. Being financially stable is a goal all the way around, but it shouldn't be the point.
Go ahead, Rob.
And to take it back to the Dune thing here, I mean, what this book was, it was the Bible for a film by Alejandro Jodorowsky, who is a surrealist filmmaker, and it was going to be a really weird version of the film Dune. They only made about 10 of these copies of this book because it's a small thing. It's not for, you know, widespread publication. However, copyright law in the United States anyway, and in some other places, applies the instant you create something. It's owned by the creators. So the copyright to this book is still ostensibly owned by whoever put it together. And the interesting thing about this, I mean, the stunt where they want to mint each page as an NFT and then burn the book. I mean, the KLF did that in 1994. There was a movie called Watch the K Foundation Burn a Million Quid, where a performance art group known as the KLF, the Justified Ancients of Mumu, the Jams, a bunch of other names, they were known as the K Foundation at the time, and they took £1 million sterling that they had made with a hit record, and they took it out to the middle of nowhere and set it on fire and filmed it, and that was their art project. That's been done. There's nothing new in the art world, but,
there's nothing new in the art world. You just said that.
Yes. And I say this as an artist, as a working artist, there's nothing new in the art world, but, the thing that, the question that keeps raising in my mind about this is they call themselves a decentralized organization, but someone has to receive the physical book. So I'm wondering if this is maybe just one fan who duped a bunch of crypto bros into financing their purchase of an expensive collectible that they now have, and can't obviously do the thing they claimed they were going to do with it. So are they just going to squirrel it away in their, you know, vault somewhere and have an expensive gloat?
So
that's been paid for.
Speaking of duping a bunch of crypto bros, what's up with crypto.com?
What's up with crypto?
What, nobody heard about this? It's the headlines everywhere. Crypto.com got hacked and millions of dollars are lost. Nobody here knows about this. Wow, I just assumed that was on everybody's fine.
No. I put rain filter on.
I'll find the story then.
Hold on. Can I just share one more thing?
Go ahead.
There is an art project book known as Celsius 233 by an artist called Philip Zimmerman, who it's about burning books. And you can own it for the low, low price of $375. And it also, there's a 5-minute YouTube video that he suggests you put on the background as ambiance when you read the book.
Hang on a second. Phil Zimmerman, that's not the PGP cryptographer, Phil Zimmerman.
I think more than one person might have that name, Alex.
It could be, though.
Pages, hand-bound using a multi-needle Coptic stitch with sewn-on hardcovers made of acid-free solid-core black museum board. This is very intense.
Did people ever make books out of like things that are poisonous when they burn as like a anti-burning like tactic.
Okay, I got the story. And of course, you know, many of us know that Crypto.com used to be owned by our friend Matt Blaze, and then he sold it to these people apparently. And boy, they've sure have run a number with it. Monday reports emerged that Crypto.com had halted withdrawals after a small number of users experienced suspicious transactions on their accounts. The cryptocurrency exchange has since resumed withdrawals and confirmed that its users' money was safe, but reports emerged later that it had lost 4,600 Ethereum, which is $15 million, and was being laundered using Tornado Cash. Yeah, I'm not really sure what any of that really means. And now there are reports out there saying that the loss might be as much as $33 million. So there's a lot of mystery, and Crypto.com is not really acknowledging what's going on. That's leading to all kinds of speculation and suspicion.
Do they have insurance?
I don't know how it works. I don't know how any
run
of it
on
works.
The bank at crypto.com.
Like, do you are there insurance policies for your crypto market or whatnot?
Well, it's not like the FDIC.
What do you do? Yeah, it's not backed by
FDIC?
That.
Well, look, you know, I'll say two things. I do believe that there are some innovations in the insurance market right now that relate specifically to blockchain related companies. I don't think there's anything that focuses on cryptocurrency exchanges, but you know, other types of insurance policies might come into play here. You know, cyber liability policies in particular, maybe even something like, you know, D&O insurance director and officer insurance, errors and omissions, perhaps. You know, it all depends on the contours of how these policies have been written, as well as the exceptions that might be in a cyber liability policy. I imagine an insurance company would be very concerned about exactly this type of liability if they were going to provide any kind of coverage for cybersecurity incidents.
Well, they would want to assess. They would want to assess, right, Alex? And what are the details of how this was broken? Is this still broken? You know, and that's where the acknowledgement part, I think, having sparse details is hurting the situation, right?
Yeah, that absolutely right. And I think while you're in the throes of an incident, you have to be extraordinarily careful. Having worked on far too many incidents in my time, you got to be really careful about what you say to the public. You don't want to mislead the public. You don't want to mislead regulators. And any kind of cryptocurrency exchange is certainly going to be concerned about perhaps like the CFPB, the SEC, the FTC. There's lots of three-letter and four-letter acronyms.
Right, but saying nothing or saying too little can also be extremely harmful. And I think we might be seeing that here.
Absolutely. You know, look, all that being said, too, though, having monitored for quite a while now attacks that are focused on cryptocurrency exchanges in the DNS and the domain name system on a daily basis, it is pretty extraordinary to see the volume and the velocity of domains that are registered every single day, whose sole purpose is to phish people with substantial cryptocurrency accounts at these exchanges and cause them involuntarily to part with their money. So there is a huge amount of attacks focusing on these exchanges, and they need to be really, really cautious about them. They need to police the DNS, and I think, you know, users have to be really, really careful about phishing emails, about clicking on any kind of links. We say this, you know, nearly every week: don't click on links from untrusted sources. Don't click on links even from trusted sources, because what looks like a trusted source might actually be a bad actor leveraging that particular trust that is assumed between you and this other party. Be careful about searching for login terms when you are on Google. You know, make sure you navigate, let's say, to Coinbase.com directly, or Celsius.com, or perhaps Crypto.com. You know, there's a lot out there that is targeting holders of cryptocurrency, and it's, frankly, every time I look at this, it's a little terrifying.
We have a phone call actually that's been sitting on hold for a long time, and we didn't give out the phone number yet, so I don't feel guilty about that. Let's take this phone call, and then we'll get out the phone number. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Good evening.
Hi. I hope you enjoyed your time on hold.
I did. Before I update you on the saga of the copper line.
Oh yes.
Two minor notes. They don't say what kits they're giving out free for COVID, but the ones right now, as you're probably well aware, are not necessarily that sensitive for Omicron, but there are a couple of others that are hopefully going to be cleared at the end of January and into February. And since there's no way of knowing what you're going to get, I'm wondering whether it might make sense to hold off in ordering your tests until there might be a greater chance of getting better tests.
Well, it doesn't make sense because you're entitled to this every month. You can get four tests
no,
per
no,
month.
No, 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 no. You're entitled to your insurance will reimburse you for 8 tests a month.
Right.
But that, but the system where you get 4 tests sent to you, that's 4 tests, period.
Well, that's hard to believe. You're saying this is a one-time thing? We're never going to be able to do this again?
Yep.
Well, then in that case, I'd say get it before they run out. But if your insurance is going to reimburse you for 8 in a month, then
you can navigate
right now it's hard to get them. I'm sure there'll be more available, and I'm sure the paperwork won't be that much of a hindrance when everybody is doing this.
Ah.
So.
But the other thing is the ignition point, the auto ignition point of paper, there is a range.
Okay.
And in Fahrenheit, it's between 424 and 475. In Celsius, that works out to between 218 and 246.
So I guess they picked the number right in the middle of that. So that's how they got Fahrenheit 451.
Yes, and, it's the flash point.
Yeah, so Celsius, I imagine they did the same thing. Mm. And, of course, now we got to get Kelvin.
Okay, now the saga of the copper line.
Yes.
No, the glass line.
Everybody,
it's glass.
Everybody sit down for this.
It's going to be glass, I hear.
You want to hear this? Gather around. Okay.
Yes, Fios. They bullied me, and they would not give in, and they said they had permission, and they were going to disconnect my phone line and take away my phone number.
Wait a minute. Where's your hum? I don't hear your hum.
There's no hum because they switched
Oh, my God. You've changed.
She's a whole new... Wait.
She's gone. This is not... Oh, my goodness.
I don't recognize it. Yeah.
You're no longer analog. You're no longer copper.
It sounds wonderful.
Too good to be true.
You're calling us from the future.
You know the box that they're supposed to give you for if the and the battery for if
yes.
the electricity goes out. I have not gotten that.
Is it coming?
Supposedly, we'll see, won't we?
Okay, can you describe how your new line is different from your old line, apart from the fact that people can now hear you?
The hum is gone and not missed. But last week I was not able to call in. Partly, maybe you weren't on last week. But
no, we were.
But even if you had been on, I couldn't have called in because not only was my computer broken, but a few minutes after they switched me from copper to Fios, they came 2 days earlier than the time and date agreed upon.
Those
they
bastards.
Surprised me 2 days early.
Wow!
I had canceled once because I had. A symptom, possible symptom of COVID, and then they decided to jump on me the second time. A few minutes after the technician left, the phone system quit on me. It said no line. So I was without computer to communicate, and I was without phone. And a delivery person was kind enough to call Verizon on their cell phone. And Verizon said, because I'm disabled, the medical escalate, someone would be there in 4 hours. Well, of course, someone was not there in 4 hours. I stayed up later and later and later and later. And more than 16 hours later, they came back and they said something had come unplugged. They accused me of unplugging it. I didn't know where this box was.
Hang on.
They said it was in the living
room. You're saying a matter of hours after you got your Fios line, it failed?
More like minutes.
Oh, boy. Kyle, go ahead.
I heard when you were going through it, did you say that you were forced to switch your phone number? Do you have your original phone number?
No, don't
give it out or anything.
I was not forced to switch my phone number. I was told if I did not give consent to switch from copper to Fios, they would cut off my service, I would stop being their customer, and I would lose my phone number.
And what a shame that would be. Yeah, they put the real pressure on you there.
So you sound good, and because you went along with what they said reluctantly, you do have your original phone number, so that isn't a mess as far as your contacts and people trying to get a hold of you, right?
This is true. As long as the phone line doesn't go out on me.
Or
as
the power.
If no electrical failure.
Right, if your power goes out, you know, you'll have maybe a few hours on Fios. I'm not sure how many hours, but... well, we'll see. There's a blizzard coming, right? So we'll,
This is what you...
What is coming?
There's a blizzard hurricane thing is coming, I think.
Mm-hmm.
One of those combination storms.
Someone should find out if people have hooked up solar panels to their Fios.
That's
box.
A good idea. I didn't say that before, that's a good idea.
It's a project. Somebody's probably done it.
What if you know, as part of our responsibility running the local copper phone lines... we also volunteer to go out. Well, not volunteer because they pay us for this. We go out and we install solar panels on everybody's Fios line so that they can also get the same reliability that copper lines used to afford in power failures.
Well, if you're going to do that, may I be the first person in line because I'm disabled?
Yeah, I guess you can move to the front of the line for that as soon as we figure out how to do this.
Yes, we have you
and
down.
Because I asked first.
Yeah, absolutely. She did ask for
us. You're there. Very important customer.
Rob, did you Eleanor. Have something? Oh, you're muted, Rob. I see your mouth moving, but you're not saying anything.
Sorry about that. That happened. I just wanted to speak really quickly to the caller's point about the COVID tests available. The at-home tests are what's known as the rapid antigen tests, which are the ones that are available in stores for you to do at home. And the FDA has approved a handful of brands of antigen tests. They're up to their standards for accuracy. And those are the ones, obviously, that the government is sending out. They are slightly less accurate than what's known as the PCR tests that you would go to the doctor's office to get, because those require a sample to be swished around in a laboratory and have a bunch of science done to it. So you're not going to do that at home yourself. But these are the tests that are available over the counter, and they are considered suitably accurate.
Well, sometimes they do not pick up infectivity of people
The current FDA guidance
calls
for certifications for a rapid antigen at-home test, calls for a minimum sensitivity, meaning fewer than 20% false negatives. That's when you do have it and it says you don't. And a minimum specificity of 98% or fewer than 2% false positives. That's when you don't have it and the test says you do. So there is a very small chance of
wow, check out
positive.
We have our own Dr. Fauci here. We get all this information, Rob.
From the
there
FDA,
are
from their own site,
that are
all this
more
stuff
accurate
is searchable there.
On the negative, but they have not been cleared yet.
Well, the ones that have not been cleared yet are not the ones that the government is sending to your home.
Yes, I know. I'm just hoping maybe if I wait until after they've been cleared, some of them will be bought by the government.
Do you have to say it that way, Rob? The test the government is sending to your home? That sounds so ominous. I mean, you know, for God's sake, this is a good thing. We're getting tested to see if we have a damn disease, you know?
I don't think it sounds ominous, what he said.
Well, okay, fine. I'm sure there are people who disagree, but... all right. Well, I hope we've answered some questions and raised even more. We have more phone calls coming in somehow, even though the phone line's not free yet. Our phone number, which we haven't given out yet, but thank you for calling and congratulations on your new line. Let's try to look at the positive aspect of this.
Thank you.
And enjoy.
Thank you. Are you able to take more than one person at the same time?
No, we can't. The actual phone line, the phone device won't, but another call did come in and is currently being transferred. We can't because they transferred somewhere else. We can't get them back. We don't know where they are.
Theoretically, the way it is now, we're doing one at a time. But theoretically, we could maybe coordinate some more sophistication to it. But we've kept it basically as simple as possible to come at people, with our guests slowly instead of having a flurry like we used to.
Okay, you know, in all that time, we've gotten 3 phone calls of other people that are trying to reach us and have been transferred into Neverland. So thank you for your call. We're going to free up this line and hopefully get another call. Good night. Our phone number, which we're giving out for the first damn time, is 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. But obviously, those people already knew that. Either that or their telemarketer is calling us right now. 802-321-4225. So when we actually hear the audible bell ring, that means one of those calls has made it through. Otherwise, we just see it on caller ID as they zip by and go orbit the sun somewhere, and maybe we get them on the way back. I think we're getting a call right now. Actually getting 2 calls, but I think one of them nosed in ahead. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Bill from Missouri. How you guys tonight?
Pretty good, pretty good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I got a couple things I want to talk about. Like,
okay.
Accessibility for people. Well, where I've lost my eyesight recently.
You lost your eyesight?
I'm sorry?
You say you lost your eyesight?
Well, yeah, I can still see. It's all blurry, and there's spots everywhere, and I can't really read and things like that. And when it comes to computer screens, it might as well forget it. I can't really navigate that well. Even when I zoom into web pages and everything else, it's still so spotty and everything.
Well, hang on. Have you seen a doctor about this?
Yeah. I'm. They put me on disability over it.
Okay. All right. And are they treating this however they can?
Yeah. They're trying to. But anyway, I mean, it's the thing that's really aggravating about this is when you try a screen reader, it wants to read out everything, like all the HTML code.
Yes.
Like div 1 and everything else like that. I'm not sure why they can't just alter it to omit that.
Of course they can. They just haven't. They haven't.
Trying to do
but they can.
Yeah. And when you're trying to do forms, right, when you're trying to fill stuff out, when you try to zoom in and everything to try to read it, it doesn't scale right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just basically pointless. I have there's a little zoom function on my iPad that kind of breaks the iPad every time I use it. It works kind of decently, but it's no better than what's going on with the computer.
Well, I think what you should do is I think you should let us know the names of the apps or software that you're using, and then once we make that known, either they'll be shamed into fixing it or somebody will write in and say, this works better, try this instead.
Yeah. Like Firefox and Chrome and Edge is what I've been using. Like the built-in thing with Windows 10 now where you can increase the font size, it'll do it on most apps, but nothing like stuff I like used to doing, like Photoshop and stuff like that in Blender.
Uh-huh.
I know there's some settings in Blender where you can increase the font size, but it doesn't scale right either.
There's so many little tools in Blender too, so you really need something that can help you get right in there to see exactly what you're clicking on and adjusting.
Yeah, because I know my shortcuts and everything for the most part.
That's cool.
I've been wanting to get my Odyssey out, and I want to like kind of model a beach. So because Windows 10 has got this virtual reality thing. We take an STL file,
uh-huh,
and it'll read it as a VR environment.
Awesome.
And, like, you know, I just want to get a sun lamp where I can't drive or anything like that anymore. I want to get a sun lamp and just, like, sit in my recliner, you know, put on some suntan lotions and put the Odyssey on and just
hang out on the beach.
Tunes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hang out on your beach. That's so cool.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, put the fan next to me. I have the wind and everything.
You got it.
Shoot.
You can play music, do all kinds of cool things.
Listen to an audiobook or listen to a podcast.
Now I want this.
Oh, yeah. I just got finished listening to Neuromancer.
Oh, wow.
Good for you. Wow.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, it's just The Matrix was a total ripoff of the whole book.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
It kind of ended real abruptly. I mean, you got Case there in the room, and the last thing he sees is Molly. And he hears that laughter, and then next thing you know, it goes to black. So I'm going to get Mona Lisa Override, and what's the other one? Zero. I forget what it's called. Zero something.
Is that what it was?
What was it, guys?
I'm sorry?
Count Zero.
Count Zero.
Count Zero.
Count Zero.
Yeah, that's
right.
It. Yeah, to see what happens next. But, yeah, I'm trying to figure all this out. I mean, I go to the doctor next week, and hopefully they can give me something to... They put one shot in my eye to try to get the swelling down from the optic nerve.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping they'll see some improvement to keep doing that to try to get the vision better so I can finish up my classes for last semester.
Yeah, you were telling us about that. That's so crucial. Keep up with that and hear what they have to say.
Yep. Well, did you hear about the kids starting up book clubs for banned books?
No.
Because of this CRT crap they've been signing into law and everything. So there's like eighth graders like starting their own little book clubs at bookstores and reading the books that are on the naughty list for the schools now.
Uh-huh.
Like in CRT and stuff like that. And I thought that was kind of cool. That's real life hacking right there. That's
absolutely.
Getting around to, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah. First of all, caller, I'm very sorry to hear about what you're going through. Do you know if there's a, you know, and forgive me for asking and feel free to decline to answer, but I'm wondering if there's a prognosis. Like, do you know if this is a temporary or a permanent condition?
It's a diabetic retinopathy.
Okay. I'd like to point you, and you may have been pointed toward this already by someone who works with you, but I'd just like to give a shout out to the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. It's a function of the Library of Congress, and you can get more information at loc.gov/NLS for National Library Service.
Okay.
And what this is it's a network of libraries all over the country that have material available in audiobook format, in braille format, in large print format, and it's a free library. It's a free circulating library. Books get sent to your home. You send them back when you're done. They send you a digital player for playing talking books, and there is a network of libraries all over the place that have these digital talking books available to you. And the whole thing is free for the user. It's tax supported. So you might be interested in checking this out, and anyone else listening who is or knows someone who's a person who's blind or visually disabled or reading disabled or in some other way disabled where you can't physically read a book in the usual manner, loc.gov/NLS.
You know,
very good work.
There's something that I'd like to bring up, too, in this particular area. We have a Canadian dish. We watch a lot of Canadian TV. And they have something up there that is on every system known as descriptive video. So what that is, it's the same channel that you watch, except they have a different feed. And on that feed, when you're, say, watching a situation comedy, there is a voice that tells you what's going on. Sharon walks to the couch and sits down. We don't have that here. Not like that, anyway. We have similar services, but I don't think it's as easy to access as it is up there. Am I wrong about this?
Disney Plus has it.
And how do you access it?
Well, you just, like, press up on your remote,
okay,
like your Fire Stick remote, and it'll have all the languages up there, and it's, like, beside English. The only reason I know this, I haven't memorized, because I keep pressing the wrong button on my remote
of
sometimes
course.
When I put it down somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And I have to keep exiting and out, but it does all right. I mean, I can see blurry stuff going on. I just can't really make out what's going on. The colors, like, sometimes it's really dark and sometimes it's really faded.
Right.
So it's kind of like that. I signed up for the astronomy club out here.
Uh-huh.
And the school I go to has an observatory. And as long as I'm part of this part of the astronomy club, I can use that telescope, which is like a 21-inch telescope, right?
Uh-huh.
So my big plan was to get them to teach me how to do it. I was going to try to, like, you know, try to find some comets or something like that, or do some observations on, like, Jupiter and the moons and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's something really cool. And all this happened, and I can't even do that. And it really kind of hurts. It hurts my feelings a little bit.
Yeah, well, life is full of frustrations. I know that, but you can still get very involved in astronomy, you know, without the benefit of eyesight. It might sound it's impossible, but people are making all kinds of discoveries all the time and not even looking at the sky. But it's truly an incredible time. Alex, I know you have something. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bill. And speaking of frustration, I remember when you called last week and you mentioned that you were having difficulty acquiring certain medicines and you know, financial difficulty and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
We were moved by that. And a colleague of mine, who also listens to the show every week, heard this. We had discussed offline if we thought we might be able to help you in some way. And we decided that we probably could help you. So do get in touch with us. We think we have something worked out that might be able to help you. So if you email oth@2600.com, I will mm-hmm. reply, and both he and I will get in touch with you about some measure of help.
Well, they approved my disability, right? The only thing I need, like, is the SSI needs, like, some kind of documentation about my grants and stuff I've been getting for the last year. And
Don't go into it now.
If I need anything, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, don't go into it now. Call, you know, just email oth@2600.com if you'd like, and I will. I'll be in touch with you offline.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay.
I think Rob has something else. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, going back to the audio description track for TV shows and films and things, there is actually a site that's put up by the American Council for the Blind, or American Council of the Blind, rather, and it's called the Audio Description mm-hmm. Project, and you can get to that at adp.acb.org, and that has a guide to how audio description tracks work, what networks and things and apps and such like have it available. They also maintain a list of DVDs and Blu-ray discs that have such a track on there for people to use. And I remember talking about a story on this program. I think you guys were, Ian and Kyle were traveling, and I was running the board. And there was a story going around about when Netflix put out a show about Daredevil, who is a superhero who is blind. And they neglected to put a descriptive track on that show. No one thought maybe the blind community would be interested in the show about a superhero who is blind. But it was quickly rectified after there was an uproar online about it. But it just goes to show that, like, it's not given as much thought as things like closed captioning in this country, which is pretty pervasive. You can get it on pretty much anything now if you turn on the television. But the audio descriptions are still not quite as widespread.
Yeah. Now, why I want to know more about the closed captioning. It always seems to be done by WGBH in Boston by volunteers. Haven't we progressed to a stage now where it can be done, you know, on a much more budget oriented, you know, where you get the money to do it? I'm not saying they're not doing it right. It seems like they're overworked. Also, sometimes, I'm watching something that is using adult language, but the person typing the captions doesn't use adult language. So they're censoring out the words that I'm hearing. And I'm just wondering, you know, where's the disconnect here? Shouldn't it be a verbatim description of what is actually being said?
And that would never happen on a relay phone call, but
no.
Because it's broadcast, they censor like crazy.
Yeah,
phone call relay operator would t- type absolutely everything you say.
You know, if there was like a sex call between two people, that relay operator would have to say all the things.
They will.
Or type all the things, yes.
Without blushing.
A lot of stories.
Well, for the recorded shows, as far as closed captioning goes, I'm surprised they don't hard code it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. They should.
Yeah, I mean, when you rip a DVD and whatnot, you can rip the closed caption and everything as a CRT file, right?
Mm-hmm.
And add it back, and even have time codes. So if you want to add in a little something, like a little commentary track or whatnot, you can do it like that.
Yeah, VLC. You can work with those files in VLC.
You know, again, Canadian TV, we were watching CPAC, which, by the way, CPAC up there means something completely different than it does down here. It's Canadian Public Access something or other. It's their C-SPAN. And there was a hearing being given, and there was somebody on the bottom right doing, what do they call it, open captioning, basically, where they're doing sign language for the deaf.
Right,
what's
ASL.
That called? Yeah. Okay. So somebody is there.
Sign language.
Yeah. It's not closed captioning. It's open. It's somebody actually doing the translation.
An
right
interpreter,
there.
Interpreter. Yes.
But there was another person on the left doing the same thing, and one was English, one was French.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really amazing to see all the ways that people are being included, which is something that I think we still need to work on here.
Yep. Being bilingual is like a dirty word in this country.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's true. It seems that way.
There's no official language in America to begin with. The founding fathers didn't want it to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like took all the languages that are actually spoken in America, including Native American languages, there's like hundreds of them.
At least.
I mean, it's just... I mean, I grew up in Virginia, and people were just amazed that people spoke French down... in Louisiana and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're amazed that there's so many people who speak Spanish out in the West and everything. And it's like, well, you know, there's more to things than just what's outside your front door.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went on a rant because I had some people post some crazy Trump is savior kind of stuff and like all this anti-science stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I was like telling them about... telling about, you know, when it comes to stuff like the Big Bang and stuff like that, the way we figured out there was a Big Bang is because of Edwin Hubble back in the day. He started measuring the redshift of light off galaxies. So they found a redshift that determines the direction and speed that you're going. So it's not that big leap of a faith to backtrack from that point, the direction and speed it's going, to figure out it's coming from one point. Kind of like having a garage with, like, you know, like five cars going out from a garage. Each car has its own little road it goes on to, so it's going on those directions. But because you can measure that speed and direction that car is going, you can determine which road it's going from, and you can determine which garage it's going to. You know what I mean?
Interesting, yeah.
And, the only thing we can't figure out is what goes on in the garage to create the car.
Well, now...
The
first telescope was named after Hubble. Now that you have the Webb telescope, which is going to answer all kinds of other questions, so we might find out how the car was built after all.
Well, yeah, the way that works is you take a prism, and when you look through a telescope, the light from the object you're looking at goes through the prism, and it'll go into a rainbow, right? And if you see any black lines, it means that there's some kind of gas absorbing the light. And the bands with the colors on it is just light being emanated from the object, right? And mm-hmm. That's how they discovered a bunch of elements too, is doing that. But the James Webb is going to be doing that, and they say it's going to be so accurate that it can literally determine the atmosphere of an exoplanet around another sun.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. That's going to be incredible.
I mean, and that's something else. Like the way we determine the distance to nearby stars is called parallaxing. You know what parallaxing is, right? Where you if you put your finger up to
an embarrassed silence from everybody.
Yeah, you put your finger up to your face, Right, and mm-hmm. you close one eye, it's at one angle. You close the other eye, the finger's at the other angle, right?
Right,
So you know the distance of which you're at and measuring this from. With astronomy, they use AU. So that's the distance from the sun to the earth. So they take this measurement twice a year, every 6 months. So like in January, they'll make a measurement. And then when it comes to June, they make another measurement to measure the parallax of the nearby star because it's close enough to be able to see the parallax. And just with a little bit of trig, you can figure out how far away it is.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And it works. It works terrestrially too. If you like, take like a yardstick or a meter stick, which I prefer meters because it's easier to calculate.
Right.
But and you stand at one end of the meter stick. You could take a protractor, and just have it point out at a right angle from the meter stick. Have a string and a little bit of something like a washer at the string, and just look at the object you're looking at. And just have that string go over the angle from your eyesight. And you do that both ends. You just do a little bit of trick, and you can figure out the distance from it. And you can figure out the height, but just like using the same protractor by just knowing the distance you are from the object, and just using the angle where you. Well, you look at the top of the object you're looking at, and you can just do a little bit of trig and figure out the other end of the triangle, and there you go. I mean, that's your. I'm just rambling.
No, yeah, just do a little bit of trig, man. You know, I never even walked into the classroom of trig. I got to algebra, and that was it. But wow, you know, you have a lot. You can teach a lot of people. You really do. You have a good way of explaining things. So I hope you never lose sight of that, because that's an incredibly important gift to have. Anything else? Because we have to move on to some other calls.
Thanks for listening to.
Yes, please write to us so Alex can definitely share what he's found out and do what we can.
Okay. If I'm running to any questions, I'll email him and
cool.
See what we can do, okay?
All right, well, hang in there, because, you know.
Well, I'm trying. I'm just hoping this can all kind of work out, because, you know, it when your eyes are so blurry, you can't even watch porn. It kind of ruins the mood, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess that, fortunately, you have a vivid imagination. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that VR thing, I mean.
Yeah, there you go. VR, you know, it's an amazing time to be alive. And
one more thing. The NFT stuff.
Right.
Well, there's this TikTok woman or YouTuber or whatnot. She's been selling her. She'll pass gas in a jar and sell it for like $1,000 a bottle.
I think I heard about this. I think I tried to forget about it too, but.
Yeah, well, people, it's working because she's getting money out of it, but which kind of makes me think of stuff I could do to try to sell, but that's neither here nor there. But she got sick from eating too many gassy foods, so she can make more, you know, poot jars. So she started selling NFTs. I can't remember the price, so it's like something outrageous. But it's like a picture of her jars. And I was just talking to my brother a little while ago about it, and I was explaining to him, you don't really own the picture. All you own is the receipt, right?
Yep, that's pretty much it,
I think. So basically it's like going into a CVS or a Walgreens and buying something off the shelf but not being able to take the thing off the shelf home. But just having a receipt for it.
Yeah, but have you ever gotten a CVS receipt? They're like 25 feet long, so that's worth something.
Yeah, well, the hatch is about that long, so I guess it fits.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of things. Great hearing from you. Please keep us updated, and best of luck with everything.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, you take care.
You have a good
night. All right. Bye. All right, our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. I can't believe we're almost through the hour. Boy, time flies. Do we have another call? I think we might. Okay. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
hey, hi, I've been listening for a very long time. I'm calling in from Connecticut, and this is the first time that I've called in.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. What part of Connecticut are you in?
So I live in Newtown, Connecticut, which is in southern Connecticut, pretty close to Danbury, New York State.
Uh-huh.
And just wanted to call and see if you folks wanted to talk a bit about some of the insurance implications of the Crypto.com hack.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's pretty amazing. You know, things are pretty basic. I think if you are a user and you're using that service, you got to do what most people don't do to begin with, and that's actually read the service agreement, right? Mm-hmm. What's the custodian agreement? What liabilities do they have for you? That's like so much more important than the insurance they have, and I think a lot of people don't do that. They just click right through it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm in the insurance business, and there's like a whole host of things to be considering here. So, if you are a if you're a custodian of cryptocurrency, you probably have something called a fiduciary liability policy, which indemnifies you if, in fact, you are hacked or you lose funds of other people. There's some insurance limit for that. And then, of course, if you are a director, you have directors and officers insurance, which pays for if you're sued. Let's say you might be publicly traded, could be part of a class action. You'll have resultant insurance for that consideration. Or maybe you're a vendor, somebody who actually was in charge of helping you set up your operation. Those folks have E&O insurance who would cover you for things like, setting up kind of faulty arrangements or creating issues where folks could get into your system. But none of those things actually really matter in the end. I think what matters to me is if Crypto.com is a real organization that wants to have a brand and grow their business, they're going to have to make right by their customers no matter what happens. So whether they have insurance or not, they're going to have to reimburse those people whose accounts were potentially hacked and whose cryptocurrencies they lost. And that's a huge risk because so many people are now investing in cryptocurrency today.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And
the other thing.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, please. No, please, after you.
Well, I just would point out that this is not a small operation, and they are naming stadiums after themselves, which no doubt those naming rights are from their investors and all their fundraising.
Crypto.com Stadium, where is that?
I don't know.
That actually exists.
There's probably more than one at this point, but go on. I was hearing that in what you were saying about how big or, you know, how much they care about their brands.
Yeah, I think that stadium is actually in California. It might actually be in L.A. I don't know the exact amount they paid for, but I think it's like $750 million or over $1 billion.
Yeah, it's in Los Angeles.
They've invested a great deal amount of money in that.
Yeah, the stadium's in Los Angeles. I just found out.
What was the second thing you were going to point out? Go ahead.
And that is that, you know, if you're using this custodian services and you're working with somebody who has a reputation and a brand they're going to be building, they're obviously going to right the issue, right? They're going to fix the problem for you. They're going to put the funds back in your account. But it actually gets to a more fundamental consideration, which is if you're going to be in that cryptocurrency space and actually making real investments in it, you probably need to be taking that cryptocurrency off the exchange and keeping things in a private wallet. And I think that creates a whole host of issues for many people that a lot of folks don't know how to do that. Or if you lose your private keys, you lose all your money. So this is really a nascent space, I think, for the insurance business, where a lot of folks have not solved for this yet. So let's say you take your currency off the exchange, you lose your keys, you lose your wallet. That's a big deal for a lot of folks, and the insurance industry hasn't actually come up with a product for that yet.
Right.
So if you're in that business, this is a real opportunity because I think this is an important part of our future, maybe not just for cryptocurrency, but for NFTs, for digital engagement, interacting in the metaverse. It's just a fascinating space. You can really get lost in this conversation.
Yeah, I'm almost lost myself right now, but you work in the insurance industry.
Yeah, I sure do. I have for a very long time.
So it must be particularly interesting to you to see all these changes and to wonder how insurance can be a part of that. Does the insurance world, do you think they're doing enough to keep up, or is there a lack of creativity there?
You know, I personally think there's a lack of creativity. You know, the insurance business is an old business. It's a business that's been around since Ben Franklin, and obviously prior to that, before this country was founded. I think the opportunities we're seeing are from younger folks, people that are entering the space kind of digital first, they have this new awareness of where the economy is going, where people's trends are going. I think about a company actually in the UK. It's called Nexus Mutual. No affiliation with them whatsoever, but they actually create insurance contracts that ensure the certainty of smart contracts executing in the way they're purported to execute. So that's a brand new product. That company has grown from like a couple $1 million to I think over $100 million today in premium, but it's a risk that no one else is covering. So I don't think it's going to be covered by your traditional insurance brands. It's going to be done by people that you haven't heard of before, new people in the space, mm-hmm. younger folks getting started in a career, kind of a digital first perspective. It's a really interesting and fascinating area to work in.
You know, I think you should write an article for 2600 about this because it's a fascinating topic and I think it would generate a lot of interest. I really do. Alex, I think you had a question?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first a statement and then a question. I'm so excited about this first-time caller calling. I think it's a veritable fountain of knowledge when it comes to insurance and the insurance industry. And by the way, you guys, you know, the insurance capital of the world is in Connecticut. Do you know what city that is, Emmanuel?
Why would I know that? I know our caller must know that, but I don't know that. If I had to guess, okay, you know what? I know what it is. It's Hartford
what?
Because Hartford Insurance.
Right.
I've heard of
God
them.
Damn it!
Wow.
What? All right.
I'm
all
smart.
Right. Good guess. You know, halfway between Boston and New York, we're going to work. You weren't going to say Bridgeport. You know that. But anyway, so this caller, I wanted to ask you in particular. Well, actually, one more point before I go into that. With respect to how, you know, the stodginess of the insurance industry and whether it's evolving and whatnot, I will say, you know, as a lawyer, what was always fascinating to me in law school was just how many really seminal cases in the history of the United States, lots of Supreme Court cases, all originated in the context of insurance companies and somebody suing over whether or not there was coverage for a particular claim. If it wasn't for the insurance industry in this country, I really think we would have a completely different version of the common law. That industry has propelled so many fascinating legal precedents in American jurisprudence. With that in mind, caller, I'd love to get your opinion about whether this crypto.com hack would implicate and in what way a cyber liability policy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. And certainly maybe the manual first. I appreciate the connectivity between fascinating and insurance. You typically don't hear those words together. So that's a kudos to you. Thank you for that offering.
I'm surprised too.
And at the same point, Alex, you make a great perspective that insurance actually has always been at the forefront of technology, right? Technology has always kind of leapfrogged law. And insurance really has kind of followed it in that respect as well. So totally agree that you see that connectivity between the advancement of technology, regardless of the point in time you're in, relative to what's happening in the insurance industry as well. You know, I think of cyber liability policies as covering things like privacy and data breach, maybe system compromise, extortion and ransomware, social engineering. Those are kind of the main tenets I think of in that regard. And you probably do have some liabilities in those cases as well, right? You do certainly do have a privacy breach, which means something different in the U.S. than it might mean in Europe under GDPR. So probably that gets exhausted. That coverage gets exposed as well. And that's probably a good thing as well, because a lot of cyber liability policies have a whole host of proactive and reactive services that go with them as well that just don't benefit actually the corporation, but also the people that have been affected as well. And that's the piece I would like to focus on actually, which is how do you help the people that have been affected, right? Their information's been exposed. They might have lost money. How do you right that wrong? And I think cyber liability is just one of those pieces with an E&O, a D&O, maybe a little bit of commercial general liability and fiduciary policies that all kind of come together to find a way to solve this issue. But the issue overall really is a technology issue. How do you make sure that doesn't happen in the first place? That's the tough thing to get right the first time.
Yeah, and it seems like the insurance industry, just like other areas, will have to sort of be able to assess what types of technological solutions and implementations
were put in place, or as you were first stating in the call, like the policy itself, how read up is the person that, who is taking advantage of the service, the user of the service, how much are they aware, and what kind of products are available for them if they do consult, if they're a small or medium or large organization, what advice and help they get, and is there anything available that will cover their specific case? And that seems like it all has to be like really tailored or like specific to what they're using and how what their exposure is.
Yeah, I think you have to know the risk, right? These are unilateral contracts. You're not going to negotiate a special deal with Crypto.com or with Coinbase. You just have to know these risks exist. But then how do you best mitigate them, right? And I think one of the things you can do as a consumer is making sure you take that off the exchange itself onto a private wallet, which opens up so many other insurance opportunities through WASTA stolen products. It's just an amazing, fascinating space. I would love to write an article about it for 2600. So challenge accepted for sure.
Awesome. Wow. Alex, did you have something else?
I was just going to underscore the point that I would love to see an article on 2600 about this. And in particular, I think being on the forefront of these issues is really interesting. But then also almost like a historical look back at how insurance was actually at the forefront of technology could be really, really fascinating from a historical perspective. And it could, I think, you know, with the readers, might change their mind about the insurance industry itself, because I know that the industry is having some difficulty attracting, you know, real cyber talent here. And that article, or maybe even a series, maybe a two-part article, could go a long way to changing that perception, getting some hackers more interested perhaps in joining underwriting teams for cyber liability insurance policies.
Yeah, I'm thinking also this could make a good Hope Talk as well, because I know there'd be a lot of people attending our conference that would be interested in this as well.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, certainly appreciate the opportunity to say hello to you. Thank you for allowing me to share some perspective. Hopefully I've allowed to give you folks something to think about, maybe give some of your listeners something to reflect upon. And we'll certainly connect in the future. So thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for all the great work you folks do. I just love Off the Hook and love this perspective, this conversation on YouTube. It was amazing last week, and that's really what prompted me to call in today.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling. It really was enlightening.
Sorry to keep you late. Have a great evening.
All right. Take care. Wow. You know what was interesting about that? He said Danbury he was calling from?
Newtown, I believe.
Yeah. He mentioned Danbury, I thought. We were just watching a train camera, and one of the train lines, it's a diesel that goes up to Danbury, and we were just watching that.
Is that the gravel train?
No, it's not the gravel train. The gravel train goes up that line late at night and then comes back down and then heads out to the east.
Okay.
I know all of this from YouTube just watching train cams. But it's relaxing. You do a lot of writing when there's just trains going by. I don't know. I can't explain it, but that's just
how many
it is.
Different ways is YouTube changing lives
it,
right
it
now?
It really is. Well, it's mostly the people running the cameras that are changing lives, but
they are. Yeah, it's not. They're just using this utility.
A lot of calls tonight. Let's have one more opportunity before we sign off for the night. So the first person that calls 802-321-4225, we'll talk to you, and then that'll be it.
What's the email address to submit an article?
Articles@2600.com.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we don't often say that, but that's true. Articles@2600.com is how you submit an article to 2600 Magazine. And unlike most magazines, 2600 basically is open to all kinds of submissions from freelancers, from people out there that may never have written before or that don't think people might be interested in what they have to say. We are. If it's got to do with technology, it's got to do with the digital age or just the hacker perspective, we want to hear from you. We really do.
What if I want to submit something anonymously?
Don't sign your name.
But
well, you know, there's okay.
What if I don't want you to know who?
You don't want me to know either? Okay, that's fine too. Well, first of all, there's a bunch of us. It's not that, I took a phone call. This is from Hackensack. Wow, nice. They got the word hack in the name. But let me just finish this. We have a SecureDrop presence as well, the whole 2600 staff will not know your name. You can still communicate with us. because the way Secure Drop is set up, you can send a message and it's all disguised. No matter what, we cannot find out who you are, but we can still talk to you about your article, or we don't have to talk to you at all. It's up to you. SecureDrop.org, and you'll see a list of different organizations, and we're in there with them.
Also, 2600.com/SecureDrop.
There's another way to get there, yes. All right, let's take this phone call. And caller, are you indeed from Hackensack?
Well, I'm close to Hackensack, but what the deal is, I'm calling to possibly help the gentleman who had the screen reader issues before. There is a screen reader, which he may not be aware of, which is free, a very comprehensive set of software, which has been in development for about 10 years or more by a bunch of programmers all over the world, and they have, if you can get it, by going to the website www.nvaccess.org. And that is a screen reader that is, I have never seen it have problems like that by reading too much or too little on the web pages, because you can configure it appropriately to ignore a lot of the garbage that's on their source code or whatever if you don't want it.
Awesome. Okay. So that's nvaccess.org. That's N as in Nancy, vaccess.org?
No, NV, November, Victor, Delta, Alpha, access.org.
Okay.
And it is for free.
Awesome. Wow. You know, I knew our listeners would come through on this. I'm sure that's going to be very, very helpful.
Yeah, hopefully that would help, and that is a very good free solution, and I think you'd find it quite helpful. And as far as, let's see, I had some other things, but it just blew out of my mind, so I'll save it for next time.
Okay.
Just wanted to give that info out there.
Well, thank you. I'm sure it'll be very, very helpful. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Wow. Hackensack. There you go, Hackensack with the answers, you know, to help other listeners out. That's awesome. Thank you so much, everybody out there that that is there with answers and help when we or our listeners need it. You can write to us, oth@2600.com, if you have further comments or things that you'd like to offer as far as information or experiences or stories or requests or whatnot. oth@2600.com. That's going to do it for us here tonight on Overtime. We'll be back again next week on WBAI at 7 p.m. and again on Overtime at 8 p.m. We are starting to post information on the Hope.net website with updates on the conference. We are moving forward as COVID starts to recede. We're hoping that this is it and that we can finally start planning in earnest and start organizing and getting this first in-person conference since 2018. Wow. Can you imagine that? That's what's happening. Hope.net. That's where the info is right now. There's going to be more info on a daily basis, pretty much at this point. And we'll have a lot more to say about that in the weeks ahead here. So for everybody, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Good night.